Welcome to the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, part of the Kansas Cyclist website and the Eero Podcast Network. Podcasts that inform by focusing both on the news and the people behind the news. My name is Edward Eero, and together with Randy Reza, webmaster of the Kansas Cyclist, we are your host for episode 15 for December 15th, 2009. In this episode, we will be interviewing Bill Poindexter, a full-time bicycle commuter in the Kansas City area, who will have a lot of great tips for those considering going car-free. Our podcast provides news and information about bicycling in Kansas and neighboring states, and is a feature of the Kansas Cyclist website, which is found at www.kansascyclist.com. Links to the Kansas Cyclist podcast can be found at the website and at the Eero Podcast Network on the web at epn.eero.com. We would like to thank our sponsors, Action Wipes, VeloCal, and Grease Monkey Wipes, for their support. If any of our listeners are interested in becoming a sponsor of the Kansas Cyclist podcast or have general feedback on the show, please write to podcast@kansascyclist.com or call our new phone number at 913-938-6855, as we would be very interested in hearing from you. Welcome back to the podcast. I know with the weather now, it has hindered many of you getting out for a ride as much as you would like to, or maybe not even at all. I know a number of hardcore cyclist friends that are still posting up their rides or participating in cyclocross events. Randy, I know, is one of them with several interesting rides that he has posted up on his Facebook page. Randy, you want to tell us anything that you've seen from those rides?
Yeah, I'm still trying to keep active and keep riding, but I'm not getting out as much as I'd like. But when I do get out, I tend to find interesting things. Last Sunday, I went down to Garnett, Kansas, and rode a bit of the Prairie Spirit Trail, and I'll cover that later on the trail segment. And I explored a bit of the area around Garnett, which has a lot of interesting history. And another ride a few weeks before that, I started at Baldwin City and went nowhere, literally. At one time, there was a town, or at least a railroad stop, that was called Nowhere, Kansas. So I stopped and took some pictures there, which was kind of cool. So yeah, I still like to get out and explore, even in winter. How about you?
Yeah, well, you need to post up that picture of Nowhere. I thought that was quite interesting. So put that on the podcast notes. Randy on his Facebook page had a he likes taking pictures of his bicycle in different places. I don't know if he's just carrying it out there by car. No, I know he's not, but that was a great picture. That was one that you should post up. I think, as I've said, I kind of switch over because I'm a Nordic skier and switch over to roller skiing. So you do see me out on the trails, but not on a bike. I'm still on wheels, but on very, very small wheels, skate skiing. Well, the first area, as always, is our news and information. Any highlights, Randy, since episode 14?
Well, I guess the biggest news of the last month has been the passage of Complete Streets in Topeka. In late November, the city council approved a resolution stating that the city staff should integrate and implement complete street concepts targeted at making roadways safe and accessible for everyone, including bicyclists and pedestrians. Complete Streets, if you'll remember, is the idea that our roadways should be designed to safely move people, not just cars. For too long, our roads have been designed to move as many motor vehicles as possible at the highest possible speed, and it's almost safe to be damned. Today, we're beginning, I think, to recognize particularly in more urban and suburban areas, that making our streets welcoming for bicyclists and pedestrians is important for making our communities more livable. And it's not just a matter of safety, but a matter of economic development. Complete streets are places where people want to live and work and shop. But back to Topeka, where there are a couple of really important specifics about this resolution. One, it passed the city council by an overwhelming margin, 8-1, which indicates that it has strong support. And two, there's actually a funding mechanism for this resolution. Back in April, Topeka voters approved a half-cent sales tax dedicated to streets and other infrastructure. So there's actually going to be money for these projects. Now, the council still left themselves with an out. The city only has to do complete streets, according to the resolution, to the extent financially feasible. And of course, that's a huge loophole, but it does seem that they're at least trying to make a good faith effort to do this right.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that. Of course, with the economy now, too, I wonder if that's affecting things. So,
I'm sure it is. And on the not-so-positive front, there's bad news out of DeSoto, Kansas, where the city council there has gone back on their word and not lifted their ban on bicycle traffic on 83rd Street. Back in July, they had resolved to lift the ban. Then they changed their mind and said they'd hold off until the road was repaved. Well, now it's been repaved, but they decided not to lift the ban after all, citing safety concerns due to the many hills and sharp turns along the road. But you know, to me, this doesn't really make much sense, because that road is really not any narrower or hillier or twistier than a lot of other roads around the state. And the kicker here is that there really are no viable alternative routes through there. There are other ways to get around 83rd Street, but those roads are even hillier and narrower. I think the real reason for the council's decision is revealed in this quote from the newspaper story. They were also concerned that lifting the ban would make the street popular with bicycle clubs from eastern Johnson County and put more bicycle traffic on the street. I'll let you draw your own conclusion from that. But it seems pretty clear to me. And I'd urge you, if you live in that area and are affected by this nonsense, that you contact the DeSoto City Council and let them know how you feel. I've provided email addresses and phone numbers on the website.
And there was a lot of posts, I know, Twitter, Facebook, regarding that decision. So that the logic there that definitely escapes me.
Yes. The rest of the news I have is mostly related to trails, and I'll cover that a little bit later during the trail segment of this podcast. But before I finish up the news, I want to remind you that this being the end of the year, this is your last chance to get yourself some tax write-offs and help charities and nonprofit organizations at the same time. Now, there are obviously a lot of organizations asking for our contributions, especially in this economy. And most of those are completely worthy of our generosity. But as cyclists, I don't think it would hurt to donate to our own. Each state has its own statewide advocacy organization, and in Kansas, that's Can Bike Walk, and they are actively seeking new members. Check them out at canbikewalk.com. Other organizations I support include the Kansa Rail Trails Conservancy, which is building the Flint Hills Nature Trail and the Landon Nature Trail, the Sunflower Recreational Trails, which is working on a number of trail projects in Kansas, and Prairie Travelers, which is building the Prairie Sunset Trail near Wichita. No doubt there are other worthy organizations in your area, so I urge you to please give generously. Just a little bit back to the groups that help us will help make our state a better place to ride a bike.
That's a good point, Randy. To keep up with all the latest bicycling news from Kansas and neighboring states, please subscribe to the Kansas Cycling News at the Kansas Cyclist website. You can subscribe both using an RSS feed reader or via email. And even for more timely news, the Kansas Cyclist has a Twitter account at twitter.com/KansasCyclist and also on Facebook at facebook.com/KansasCyclist. Also, the podcast has the same at twitter.com/KSBikePodcast and then the same extension on facebook.com. Next is our upcoming rides section. There are many rides that are detailed on the website, so what do we have of interest for this episode, Randy?
Well, there's not too much to report this time out as far as organized rides. There's still a bit of cyclocross going on, so you can check the Kansas Cyclist calendar for that. But at this point in the year, many of us are looking forward to and planning our rides for next year. A lot of the annual rides are beginning to set their dates, so watch the calendar for those. In Kansas, the big ride is Biking Across Kansas. 2010 will be the 36th year for the ride, and it runs the week of June 5th through 12th. Now, they don't announce the route until January, so this is pure speculation, but I'm guessing that it'll probably go through the southern half of the state. 2007 was a southwest to northeast route, and 2008 was across the northern part of the state, and 2009 was a central route. So a southern route is a fairly good guess, I'm hoping.
Are you thinking of doing BAK this year?
Well, I'd love to, but I think I'm going to have a conflict. I'm planning to do the Dirty Kansas 200, and it goes out June 5th, which is the first day of BAK.
I see.
I'm still not sure I can still get my head around the 200 miles of gravel roads, but that's what I'm aiming for.
And that's one day, too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
How about you? Do you have anything planned?
I usually do the Johnson County bike rides. I like their Century rides, the Lone Star Century I especially like, and then the Cider Mill Century, which we did one of our podcasts on this year, especially if the weather is nice, not so hot. That's always a great course. Are you thinking of doing the R&R Century this year?
It'll probably happen in some form. For the last 3 years, in case you don't know, I've put on a small private ride in September. The first year was just me and my friend Reed. He's the other R in the R&R Century title. And the last 2 years, it's been he and I and a few friends. But now Reed has moved away, so the ride's going to change one way or the other. I'd like to open it up to the public at some point if I can work out all the logistics. I don't know if that'll happen in 2010, but maybe. So the ride will probably be in late September, just after the tour of Missouri, assuming that's still happening, and probably will still be in eastern Kansas with 100-mile and 60-something-mile options.
Yeah, it was a lot. I did it for the first time last year, and it was a lot of fun. Smaller group. We stopped for lunch and a little bit more of a casual ride, but a great course that you mapped out, Randy. It was a great countryside, and we just absolutely had a beautiful, beautiful day for it. So one idea, and I'm just throwing this out right now, is maybe we can, now that your other R is gone, unless you want to keep that name, we could maybe call this the Kansas Cyclist Century and build it up that way.
Might do that.
Remember, for a complete listing of upcoming rides and races, visit the events section of the Kansas Cyclist website. These listings will have more details on how to sign up for the events, with both registration links and links back to the actual ride websites. We wanted to talk briefly about our newest sponsor, Grease Monkey Wipes. If you remember, we spoke with one of the founders, Tim Stansberry, in episode 14. What Grease Monkey Wipes are is individually packaged degreasing cleaning wipes that utilize a natural, non-toxic citrus formula to handle heavy-duty cleaning, including bike grease and road grime. I have used Grease Monkey Wipes now several times, and they are handy after working on your bike before the ride, after the ride, or possibly for a mid-ride repair, such as fixing a flat tire. Due to the portable nature of the product, Grease Monkey Wipes easily fit in a saddlebag or jersey pocket. The durable nature of the wipes allows them to easily clean not only skin, but also an oily chain, a dirty frame, and more. Kansas Cyclist Podcast listeners can receive a 15% discount by entering Kansas as the coupon code, and there is also a direct link to Grease Monkey Wipes at the website. As with other disclosures, and in accordance with the new FTC regulations, the Kansas Cyclist Podcast is not provided free Grease Monkey Wipes and receives remuneration only through the sales on the website. As a note, Grease Monkey Wipes is also on the web and has both Twitter and Facebook accounts. Okay, now it's time for new trails to try. Like so much other information, Randy has links to many of the riding trails in Kansas and the adjoining states on the website. And if you have a trail that's not on there, I'm sure that Randy would like to hear from you. Randy, what would you like to detail this episode?
Well, there's actually a fair bit of things going on with trails in Kansas. First off, we have Baldwin City, where there is a proposed multi-use path that is meeting some resistance from the city council there. Over the opposition from some members, they did eventually decide to apply for a grant from the Kansas Department of Transportation to help fund the trail. The grant application doesn't obligate them to anything, even if they get the grant, so I'm not quite sure why they were hesitant, but at least they eventually did decide to move towards it. And in Maryville, Kansas, in the northern part of the state, the first 2 miles of the Big Blue Rail Trail have been completed and open to the public, with what is, I understand, is a really neat little covered bridge on the new section of the trail. This trail will eventually stretch 12 miles from Marysville to the Nebraska border, where it will hook up with the Homestead Trail, which will take it all the way to Lincoln, and from there to Omaha via the Mopac Trail, where it hooks up to the Steamboat Trace on the Nebraska side of the river and the Wabash Trace on the Iowa side.
That sounds interesting. Do you know, Randy, if that covered bridge, is that a new covered bridge or is that an older one that they're using?
No, I believe it's something new that they constructed. Wow. And finally, in trail news, we have the Prairie Spirit Trail, which is the longest rail trail in Kansas at 51 miles in length, and it stretches from Ottawa in the north to Iola in the south. This is a really nice and scenic trail, but for the past couple years, it has been split in two. In 2007, a flood tore up several miles of the trail and almost completely destroyed the bridge over Pottawatomie Creek, which is a fairly long span of a couple hundred feet. So for the last 2 years, that segment of the trail has been closed for repairs, with trail traffic routed onto nearby gravel roads. That wasn't a huge issue, but I really don't think they did too good of a job with the signage. I rode the trail a couple times, and the first time I went through, it was kind of hard to follow. But now the trail is open again, and I visited there this last Sunday to get some pictures, and I was pretty impressed. The bridge is made up of three spans, and the ones on each creek bank were still intact, but the center one had been washed away. So now the center span is brand new, with new steel and a concrete deck. There's also brand new railing on the entire structure. It's really a pretty cool bridge, and much of the character of the old one has been maintained, with impressive stonework on the bridge piers and abutments still intact. It's worth a ride on the trail just to see the bridge, I think. However, I did find the trail to be a little soft when I was there. Some of it was just fine, but some was kind of mushy, and it felt like pedaling through wet sand. Really pretty tough. But this was just after a snowmelt, so the trail was still pretty saturated. Give it a few days to dry out, and it will be fine.
Yeah, it looked like from your post you were really pretty tuckered out from that slow going.
Yeah, I had to push pretty hard just to get 10 miles an hour average out of it.
Yeah, well, you know, you ought to post up, too, that picture you took, because it really was a fascinating picture of the stonework on that bridge for the podcast.
All right.
Very pretty.
It is beautiful. One other note on the Prairie Spirit Trail. Next spring, it's going to be broken again, and this time because of road work on the nearby 169 Highway, where they're replacing a bridge that the trail passes beneath. The trail will be closed for construction, which is expected to last through late summer. Again, they'll route trail traffic onto adjacent gravel roads, this time I hope with better signage. But one cool thing here is that they hope to replace the underpass with a tunnel, which would add another really fun and interesting attraction to the trail.
Well, as always, Randy has several, if not all, the trails on the site, so please do visit the website. Randy, has there been any feedback that you'd like to share with the listeners from our last episode?
No, we don't have anything, but we encourage you to contact us, as we'd love to hear from you, and we do take your suggestions to heart.
We certainly do, and as you know, we have a new phone number now. That is 913-938-6855. You can leave a voicemail there or contact us by email at podcast@kansascyclist.com or comment on the blog on the website or on the Facebook page, or if you want to send a message through Twitter. So please do contact us because we'd like to hear from you. Hey, do you organize a ride or know someone that does? Well, we have the perfect solution for you, and it is called VeloCal. VeloCal.org is a slick web-based bicycle calendar that is extremely easy to set up and use compared to other web-based group calendar systems. So give it a try, as VeloCal is built for and by cyclists, and best of all, it is free. As many of you know by now, I organize a ride on Saturday mornings called the Quivira Park Bike Ride, which goes from May through October here in the Kansas City area. What I like most about VeloCal is that when I have to change the ride, such as for rain, the service will send out a new email to all subscribed riders of that change. Even in the off-season for me, I can post up special rides, especially if we have some pleasant weather, and those subscribed will receive an email. It is a great program, so please click on the link on the Kansas Cyclist website and start using this calendar today. VeloCal is based in Fort Collins, Colorado. In accordance with the new FTC regulations, the Kansas Cyclist podcast does not receive any remuneration from VeloCal, and instead we promote each other's services through cross-marketing on each of our websites. Continuing a feature of our podcast, which we call Bicycle Safety Tips, we are detailing information from bicyclesafe.com and going over their 10 tips on how not to get hit by cars. The discussion today is tip 8, the left cross. And what the left cross is when a car coming towards you makes a left turn right in front of you or right into you. Randy, how does a cyclist avoid this one?
Well, the left cross is usually caused by one of two things. It's either they don't see you at all or they misjudge your speed. And to avoid it, one of the things you want to do is you want to avoid riding on the sidewalk, because motorists just don't expect to see you coming off there at high speed. The other thing you'll want to do is get a headlight, particularly if you're riding at night, and that's something that's required by law anyway. You'll also want to wear something bright, even during the day. It may seem silly, but bikes are small and easy to see through even during the day. Yellow or orange reflective vests can really make a big difference. Reflective leg bands can also make a difference, especially at night. And number 4, don't pass on the right of cars that may be stopped in the roadway. Oncoming motorists are not going to see you if you do that, because you'll be shielded by the motorist in the roadway. So just slow down and take it slow, and try to make eye contact with the driver. And even if you can't do that, slow down at intersections if you see a car in the opposite direction, just to make sure that you can stop if you have to.
And if you go to the Bicycle Safe website, you'll see there's so much commonality in many of these things, from the right hook, or right hook two, or the left cross, that so many of the things are the same. Stay off the sidewalks and be visible. Don't be passing where cars can't see you, either from the right or the left. In our next podcast, we will be going over tip 9 called the rear end. And again, all those can be found at bicyclesafe.com. Before we get to our interview, we wanted to spend a moment and talk about Action Wipes, one of our sponsors, and in fact, our first sponsor. Action Wipes are made specifically for athletes using 100% natural ingredients, including pure oils such as tea tree and eucalyptus. And take it from our experience, they do work. So stop using baby wipes with all that alcohol. That can and does dry out your skin with repeated use, and try Action Wipes. For more information, go to the Kansas Cyclist website and you will see the ad with a link to order. All Kansas Cyclist podcast listeners get 15% off their orders by using the website link or by just entering Kansas on their orders. In accordance with the new FTC regulations, the Kansas Cyclist podcast is not provided free Action Wipes and receives remuneration only through the sales on the website. Today we will be interviewing Bill Poindexter, a full-time bicycle commuter and an executive recruiter here in the Kansas City area. Bill has been in sales his whole career and in 1995 became an executive recruiter and now owns his own business called Poindexter Recruiting Incorporated, located in Prairie Village, Kansas. In late 2000, he traded his cars in for a bicycle and proceeded to ride car-free from 2001 through 2004. Then, because of work, had to purchase an automobile. But then, in June of 2009, went car-free again. Bill currently rides 8,000 miles per year, both for pleasure and commuting by bike. In fact, for 2009, he has gone over 8,600 miles to date. Bill works out of his house and rides for fun, fitness, to client meetings, for errands, to see friends, and anything else that involves going from one place to another. He credits his cycling with the loss of more than 100 pounds and a much healthier lifestyle. Bill was featured in an article titled Cycling, The Road to Health, Bill Poindexter, in the American Bicyclist magazine in January 2008. He is single and lives in Prairie Village with his two cats. Welcome, Bill. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys.
Well, that's great having you. We know from reading the article in the American Bicyclist that was published about 2 years ago that you cycle for health reasons. When exactly did you start cycling, and what inspired you to start?
Well, I was pretty overweight in 2000 and almost weighed 400 pounds and actually maybe just a little bit over.
Wow.
I looked in the mirror one day and said, you know, you need to change your whole lifestyle around. You need to get back to who Bill used to be and become more active. I started a walking program and a biking program. Over a period of about 4 months, I lost about 40 pounds, and that was riding a bicycle in the gym, stationary bike, mm-hmm. and walking mainly around my neighborhood. And from that point, I decided to buy a bicycle and give that a try. My first ride was to my gym, and it was a 7-mile ride there and 7-mile ride back. Luckily, I only fell off the bike once. Getting up to an intersection and the wheels got locked and fell over. But that was the start of it. And then over a period of actually years, I ended up losing about 130 pounds, and I weigh about 265 now. And I've kept that weight off since I started. And I'm doing really well and really in excellent shape. And I ride when I first started riding, it was mainly for exercise. And now it's kind of turned into not just exercise, but for the environment. Obviously for the health reasons. And just for the fact that cycling itself is fun. And the first 2.5 years I was biking, with the exception of maybe a couple of months, I totally decided to downsize the things in my life. Ended up getting rid of my cars and started riding a bike specifically for transportation purposes, not just commuting from work, but going to the grocery store, running errands, riding for recreation, riding for exercise, for every possible reason you can think of from a transportation standpoint. And I was car-free from 2001 to 2004, ended up getting a car for work reasons in 2004, and then had a car up until actually June of this year. And I just realized one day that, you know, I'm not even using this car. In my garage, when you open up the garage door during the summer, you would first see a bicycle, then you would see the lawnmower, and then you would see the actual car. So that's the way it always was. I was like, you know, I need to get rid of this thing. And so, make a long story short, I went car free again, and am loving it.
Well, we have that's why we wanted you on the podcast, because you know, both for the health and the transportation reasons. But I
sure.
Before we move over to the transportation, I had a few other questions on the health.
Sure.
You, I think, had said in the article too, there was some real specific things that help improve your health. Could you go into those a little bit about, you know, what are some of the factors that you looked at, you know, prior to really creating an exercise program, and then now to where you are now as far as different health factors?
Well, being that obese, I decided that it might be a good idea to go to the doctor. I was suffering from anxiety, which I have probably since my early 20s. Seemed like I had high blood sugar. And so I decided to go to the doctor and make sure that I was on a good program. Ended up getting some medicine for the anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then over a period of just a few months, I was off the medication. But I did ask the doctor if it was okay to be on a program. And I also did like an EKG, a stress test. Things like that with a cardiologist just to make sure that I was okay. Mm-hmm. And they gave me the okay, and that's when I started that walking program and bicycling program.
I see. And it's amazing. I know I want to ask if there's other things that you do, but this year alone, 2009, I know we have a few weeks left, but sure. You've put in 8,600 miles. Amazing.
I have. Yeah. I have, and that's actually not including January and February of this year. I wasn't keeping track then.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And I was doing a lot of workouts in a gym. I do a lot of Stairmaster workouts during the winter. But I was biking to and from there. But I couldn't honestly say how much mileage I put in those 2 months. It wasn't very much.
Yeah.
So
is there, besides the Stairmaster and cycling, is there other forms of exercise that you...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, being the fact that I don't own a car, I have to get from point A to point B some way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not always going to be the bicycle. And where I live in Johnson County, I live in Prairie Village, Kansas. Mm-hmm. There is no real good public transportation reliable. And so I walk everywhere or I bike everywhere. I'm kind of a stickler, and I did this back in 2001, 2004. I figured if I'm car free, then I'm going to be car free. I'm not going to be car free and get rides from my friends and get rides from family.
Right.
To family get-togethers or if I'm going out with my friends. I'm going to actually ride my bike, or I'm going to walk there, or try to find some kind of public transportation. And there are exceptions to that, but I don't even accept rides from friends, no matter what the weather is.
Well, other than the health benefits, what do you get out of biking for transportation?
What do you see
as the advantages?
The advantages of biking for transportation?
Yeah.
Randy, there are so many. And I would say probably besides the health issue, I would say the best is a peace of mind, that you're out there and you're not polluting the environment. You're saving money by not using gas. You're on a bicycle, and And I don't know if you were, well, I guess I know you guys do, but I don't know if the any of the if all the listeners are bike riders or not. But bicycling's just fun. You know, we were all kids once, and it was fun when you're a kid, and it's more fun when you're an adult. I know that some of the rides I did this summer, and I did a couple with Randy. You know, we were out in the middle of the country, in Johnson County, riding on gravel roads, just having a hoot out there. And I'm 46, and if you ask me, you know, 30, 40 years ago, if I'd be riding a bike when I was 46, you know, on a nice Saturday afternoon, I would have said, you're probably crazy, but I'm doing it, and it's fun. So to answer your question, though, the biggest benefit for me is the peace of mind, the well-being, the endorphins that come from riding a bicycle. And it's great for the environment. We all know the environmental issues that are happening in the world today. And it seems like people are pretty passive from the standpoint that, you know, people are still buying the SUVs. And you know, one of the reasons why I went car free again, Ed and Randy, is I decided to make a statement to stay car free until they come out with a car that is 100% gas free. And I know already that they have the electric cars, they have, and they've had them for a while, and they have the hydrogen cars, and they have the natural gas cars. But, you know, the oil companies and the car companies, not to get too political, are keeping that technology from the consumer because they still have all these oil cars out there and all these gas cars out there. And I understand, and don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-car. I'm just anti-gas car. Mm-hmm. So from the environment standpoint, bicycles are so environmentally friendly. It's incredible. And also they really do save you a lot of money. I'm finding that this year actually in the next year, because I got rid of my car in June, I'll probably save in the neighborhood of about $2,400. And that's from that number is my car was paid for. So that number is based on insurance and the amount of gas I used last year.
Mm-hmm. And plus, if you have people have had, you know, with car payments and everything else, it's,
oh, sure.
It's a lot of money.
Sure.
So you've been on one of Randy's rides. So
Randy's rambles.
Yes, yes.
That's what they're called.
I know. I'm more of a road biker, so he goes with me on the road, but we did end up on a detour on a gravel, and I can understand, you know, because we ended up in this really interesting cemetery. Sure. That he hadn't seen, and we, you know, took some time to go back in there. So it's a lot of fun.
Sure. And just to throw this in too, one of the, you know, I was talking about how much fun bicycling is. It is fun. And, you know, each time I take a ride, I don't just look at that as getting from point A to point B. I look at it as an adventure. Mm. I have to think about how long I'm going to be gone. Do I need to bring extra clothes? Do I have enough money with me? Which bike to take? What's the weather? What am I going to expect on the road? Or will there be detours or the possibility of detours? Do I need my lights on my bike or not? What kind of tires do I need? There's a lot of different things. But the big thing is that to me is like going on a little mini adventure. You know, I belong to the Adventure Cycling Association. I read all these stories about people going, you know, around the world and, you know, to Vietnam and to England and to Scotland and to Siberia and to Alaska and to places all over the United States and even going from like Alaska down to the bottom of South America. And I don't have the resources to do that. I don't have the time to do that because of my business. And I have some pets that are elderly that I have to take care of. And so what I do is I look at each ride as a little mini adventure. And sometimes those are just a few minutes, and sometimes they're maybe a couple of days. But the majority of the rides are the longer rides are usually on the weekends, and they usually last about 60 to 70 miles. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned early on was, because I usually stay local, I don't go very far within a 100-mile radius of Kansas City. One of the tricks I used was, every time I go on a ride, even if I've been in those locations, to look at something, to find something new that I haven't seen before, whether it's maybe a new animal that I haven't seen, maybe it's a person I haven't met, maybe it's smelling a flower I haven't smelled before. But that's kind of a trick I use to keep things fresh.
Yeah, and you're so right. There's when you're going by bicycle, you can go down the same road, you know, driving, I don't know how many times. And then when you ride on a bike, you see things that you've never seen from the
Absolutely.
Car.
And Absolutely.
Kansas City especially has so many neat things. I went on the ride that was sponsored. My wife and I did this a couple of years ago now on the fountain tour. And that was
right.
just fabulous, just, you know, all the different fountains that are in Kansas City that
Absolutely.
You know, we are the city of fountains, and people just go, you know, driving quickly right by them.
Right.
Well, let's, what you were saying earlier on working, let's hone in on that a little bit. Let me give you a scenario. Let's say, I know you work out of your home, you know, as an executive recruiter. You've got a new client that you're going to meet with. It's pouring down rain. And, you know, you need to get, you know, 4 miles or so across town to meet with the client. How would, do you bike over in that? I mean, do you have the equipment to be presentable when you get there? And, you know, what do you do with your bike?
Well, sure. Anything else on that?
Yeah, I that's good.
And 4 miles, come on, it's usually like 10 miles.
That's right,
but,
yeah.
And usually
there's a 40-mile-an-hour
like
wind. And,
in a
yeah,
downpour.
Yeah.
And no, that's a good question to ask. And you know, I'm a big stickler on, probably because I've been biking so much, is that there are no excuses. Biking for transportation is much easier than people think. And in that situation, what I would do is, if it was a brand new client or if it was a client that really didn't know me that well, I would still tell them that I bike for transportation and that I'm going to be at their location, but I might need to change my clothes, and would that be okay? And is there some place near there or at their location that I can do that?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys would be so surprised on how many people are just amazed by that I'm going to do that, and I'm that open about it, and how welcoming they are. And in most cases, I would say in 90% of the cases, unless we have to meet with other people, they tell me, don't even worry about changing. You know, I'll have a towel here for you to dry off if it's raining.
Mm-hmm.
And people are very agreeable about it. And so what I do, though, is if I need to get down there and need to have a change of clothes with me, I'll have a small backpack with me or a pack on the back of my bike. And I'll cover that in a trash bag if it's really raining out. And then I'll take a change of clothes with me. And then by the time I get down there, I'll find a bathroom. I'll towel off real quick and change into the work clothes. And then put the rest of the wet clothes in the bag. Go to the meeting, do what I need to do, come back, change, and then hit the road again. One of the things you learn is you learn how to stay as dry as possible when you are a bike commuter. And in the wintertime, especially, because you have to worry about hypothermia.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summer, you really don't have a choice because you're going to get wet anyway, because you can't really wear a rain jacket, you know, a heavy rain jacket, because you're going to get too hot, especially in the Kansas City summers. So does that make sense?
Yeah. What do you do with your bike then, too? I mean, is that another thing you work out with a client that I've got my bike? Is there a place to park it or?
Well, you can park your bike anywhere. That's a great thing about a bike. You don't need a parking space. You don't need a parking garage. You can park your bike at any lamppost or a streetlight post. I have no problem parking my bike anywhere.
Okay, I see. So you just, I mean, I was thinking more for security purposes?
Yeah. I have a good solid lock for it, and usually I'll park it like right in front of the building, so it's in view of people in the building. So it would be less likely for somebody to take the bike. Now, if it's if there's options there, if there's like a garage that the client has, I might ask if I can keep the bike in the garage. And again, it's just it depends on each client.
Well, what for people that would be considering bicycling as a form of their form of transportation, what would be the top three pieces of advice that you'd give them?
To answer your question, though, Ed, mainly is to get the best wheels possible. It's important for you to have a solid wheel set where you're not going to break spokes. Also, to have with that wheel set a good tire that is going to be agreeable with whatever pavement issues you're going to be on, whether it's gravel or whether it's a road, or if you're going to be going over dirt, you might even have a mountain bike tire for transportation purposes. And then you have to look at, what time of year it is, if there's going to be snow on the ground, or if it's just going to be dry pavement. So wheels are the first thing. The second thing is, don't ever, and it's a huge pet peeve of mine, use weather as an excuse not to ride. If anything, use it as an excuse to ride, because if you ride and it's really crappy weather, it will give you an epic story that you can tell to your friends and family. And everybody will be like, God, I can't believe you rode your bike here. Matter of fact, I was down at Starbucks this morning and I walk in and I have all my gear on, and it's 9 degrees or 8 degrees, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I had frost on my face from my face mask. And they were like, I can't believe you rode your bike here. And, what I didn't tell them is that the ride was like 2 miles. but they, even if it was 2 miles, they still think you're some kind of hero and some kind of superhero. Mm. But don't use weather as an excuse. Also, be patient. This is probably one of the most important things, is be patient in regard to the fit of the bike. Whether you've had a bike or whether you're just starting to ride a bike, and especially if you're just starting to ride a bike, bike fit is something that's entirely unique. You're going to hear every different bike shop will have a different fit system or some kind of fit system that they were all certified in. But it really comes down to, does the bike fit you? And the only way to figure that out is actually getting on the bike and putting at least 100 miles on it. And then you might change your seat. You might move your seat up. You might move your seat down, forward, backwards, the same with the handlebars, until you, after riding the bike for a significant period of time, will figure out what works for you and what makes you comfortable during every ride. And I know you said three. I'll just give you one more, because this actually is the most important, is understand that when you are on the road, you're invisible to cyclists. Doesn't matter what kind of clothes you're wearing, how bright they are, what kind of lights you have, and how much they're flashing and how bright they are. And the same goes with motorcyclists, is that when you're on the road, cyclists are not noticed by most cars, especially in this day of texting and people on mobile phones. Their minds are in different places. They're looking for cars. They're not looking for bicyclists. So the big thing is, make sure that you are looking at them eye to eye, and that even if a car is pulling out and they're seeing you eye to eye, that you don't move in front of them until they acknowledge that you're there. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's a real good point.
At this point, since I've been bicycling like I have for the last 9 years and putting in 6,000 to 8,000 miles every year, I can tell you now that it's been thousands of times where I avoided getting hit by a car that just came out in front of me, even though they had a clear view of me, because I was aware of the fact that I was invisible to them. I hear of cyclists, getting hit all the time, and I've never been hit. As far as I'm concerned, there might be some some people that really have a strong hate for cyclists and that really want to run them over. I've never seen any. I've had people do some pretty mean stuff to me, though, in terms of yelling at me or throwing stuff at me. But I don't think anybody really wants to run over a cyclist. I don't think they get up in the morning and say, "I'm going to run over a cyclist today." I think that honestly, in a lot of cases, they're just not paying attention, and they're just totally distracted, and they put themselves in a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked about gear a little bit, but tell us about the bikes that you ride.
I ride two bikes right now. One is my main bike. It's the same. It's not the same bike that I started with, but it's the same bike model that I started with, and that's a Trek 820 mountain bike. It's a steel mountain bike, chromoly frame, and it's extremely heavy. It's very stable. I have custom hand-built wheels on it, which actually cost, I think I paid $289 for the bike, and the wheels cost about $300. So the wheels are actually a little more expensive than the bike. And they have, it's actually Gordo Salsa wheels, which are mountain bike wheels. I have a Continental Touring tires on it, and that's a slick tire. And I have some handlebars on it that are also custom handlebars, and with very comfortable bar ends, carbon fiber bar ends. And then I use a rack on it and a pack from Arkel out of which is called a Tail Rider pack from Arkel out of Canada. And it's an exceptional bike, and I've used it, and it's been a stable bike. The wheels are 26 inches. I haven't had to do any major repairs on it. I've had this bike now for 3 years, and I've probably put, close to 20,000 miles on it in the 3 year period, maybe 4 years, and it's held up the whole time. Actually, I should say probably more like 15,000 on this bike. And it's held up. It's been a great bike, and I totally recommend it for people that are thinking about getting an entry-level mountain bike. The thing about this bike, though, is that, the fact I'm a big guy, I don't really worry about if a bike's light or heavy. And also, too, because I commute by bike, I'm more interested in the strength of the bike and the stability of the bike and the comfort of the bike. But yet I ride it in a fairly aggressive mountain biking position, which means I'm bent more forward. And this bike actually weighs 43 pounds with my normal pack and with a couple of water bottles on it. And that seems like it's pretty heavy. And it is heavy, but it works well for me. And it's very stable in bad weather. And I can always count on this bike. The other bike I have, so that's the Trek 820. The other bike I have, I got about a year ago, and it's a Surly long-haul trucker. It's a long-distance touring bike. Actually, Randy has the same one, except I have 700cc wheels, and he has 26-inch wheels. And it is, for a long time, I was more comfortable with the mountain bike because I knew that there were a couple years there where money was a little bit tight, and I just didn't want to go out and buy an expensive bike. So I wanted to keep the bike simple in case I need to do a lot of repairs. But with this bike, it's a little more expensive. It's about $1,000, and I do have custom wheels on it, but they only cost maybe $100 more than the wheels that come from the factory. And this bike has been a great long distance touring bike for me, where I might take it on longer rides than the mountain bike, and it allows me to go, instead of going, like on the Trek 820, I might go 60 miles in a day or 70 miles. The road bike does allow me to go longer distances. So I might even be able to go up to 100 miles or a little over 100 miles in one day. So the touring bike is a chromoly steel frame. It's very comfortable. I have a seat on it that I like, and I use a rack on the back of it, and I use that same Arkel tail rider pack that I use on my Trek 820. And I'm amazed on how comfortable the bike is. For years, I was riding that Trek 820 mountain bike because I knew I could take it anywhere. And I've come to realize that these long distance touring bikes that are steel frames, they're very comfortable. But you know, if you have big thick tires on them, and I have 37 millimeter Continental tires on it, you can pretty much take it almost anywhere. It's amazing. The only thing you really can't do is maybe single track on a mountain bike trail. And so I've had a lot of fun riding that. And this year, I think I've ridden the road bike, the Surly Long Haul Trucker. I think I did about 5,000 miles on that, and then the rest of the miles were on the 43 pound. mountain bike, which even makes that, you know, that 8,600 miles that I've done so far, or 87, whatever it is, even makes it kind of more amazing to me, is that I've done part of it on a 43-pound bike.
How do you deal with hauling really large stuff, like when you're grocery shopping?
That's a good question, and my answer is that being single, I don't really need a lot of stuff, so I'm kind of I'm a grazer. And I'm in the grocery store maybe two or three times a day, and everybody knows me. And I use one grocery store, and they laugh because I'm in there so much. And I just grab as much as I need for that day generally. But typically what I do is I usually get my evening meal and stuff for the next day, at least breakfast and lunch, in the evening after one of my rides. And my rule of thumb is, and this is kind of funny, my rule of thumb is if I can't carry everything in my arms in the grocery store to the checkout counter, then I probably have too much stuff and I probably won't be able to carry it very well on my bike. And what I found is that as much stuff as I can carry in my arms, I can put in the back of my rack on the bike, the tail rider, and then maybe carry one bag, plastic bag, double bagged, and carry that over my front left handlebar, and that balances on my front left handlebar. I've been able to carry a significant amount. The only thing that I have challenges carrying, and this is, I'm trying to figure out if I need a trailer or not.
That's what I was going to ask.
Is my cat litter. I have two cats. I generally buy a 33-pound drum of cat litter. And that's hard. That's hard to carry on a bike. As a matter of fact, it's obviously impossible unless you have a trailer or maybe just huge panniers, but I don't even have any panniers. So in that case, what I've done is I have neighbors, and if they go to like Costco or something, I just give them money and they usually will get me like 10 tubs of the cat litter. That's what I've done so far. And then if I do run out, then I'll just grab a smaller, you know, like a 10-pound container of it.
So have you thought about buying a trailer? Or are you afraid?
Buying a trailer. I've been researching it for the last few months, and I've been thinking about it for like the last 5 years. I'm not one to just jump in. I can't decide whether I want a two-wheel trailer or a one-wheel trailer, whether I want a bob or a burley or some kind of other burley, or even just get a used kids trailer. And then I've talked to some people around town that make trailers too, custom trailers. So I was talking to them. So I just haven't made that jump yet.
Randy, you have is yours custom, the one you have?
My trailer?
Yeah.
No, mine's a relatively cheap Nash Bar trailer. It's a single wheel trailer, a knockoff of the Bob. I haven't used it all that much. You know, it works. It takes a little bit of getting used to the kind of the extra tippiness of the bike,
right,
especially when you stop.
Right. And in like any bicycle equipment, people have all sorts of opinions on it. Some people like them, some people don't. So I just haven't bitten the bullet yet to get one, but that will probably be in the future.
All right. So getting around by bike in Kansas City, what's your opinion of the bicycle friendliness of the city?
I think as a whole, I'm very optimistic in it. I've been riding now for 9 years. When I first started riding, Randy and Ed, I would bike to various locations and I would see maybe one or two other people bicycling. And now I don't just see one or two other people. I'll see not groups of people, but I'll see a significant amount of people bicycling. And so I'm very optimistic that things are definitely changing within the Kansas City area. There's the greenway system out there in terms of the trails that are associated with the parks and recreation area on the Kansas side and on the Missouri side. There seems to be more bike lanes going up around the Kansas City metro area. There's more bicycle clubs. And as a whole, though, I've never really had a negative problem with Kansas City as a bicycling community. You know, I think the rule of thumb for me was just stay off the main roads in terms of like major streets and take back roads as much as possible and just be a smart cyclist and have a lot of fun.
When there are bike lanes, is that something you appreciate, or do you just prefer to kind of mix it up with cars?
No, I would love to see a bike lane on every major road in Kansas City, but I don't think that's very realistic in the near future.
No.
And if there's a bike lane, I'll use it and glad to use it. I still think that even if we do have bike lanes in Kansas City, that we need to educate the public, the people that are runners, the people that are walkers, and the people that are in cars, that they are bike lanes. Because I've used some bike lanes and cars were using them and also runners were using them too. And that's okay. But just, you know, I think it comes down to more of a safety issue. And I would like to see that, you know, the Bicycle League of America, they rate cities and towns around the country and they have a platinum rating and I think a gold rating and a silver rating and a bronze rating. And Kansas City has yet to, I think we have one bronze rating in maybe Mission, Kansas, something like that, and maybe
Shawnee.
In Lawrence, Kansas. But I would like to see, and matter of fact, I'm hoping to be an advocate for this. I would like to see Kansas City to become eventually a platinum city. And I think we have a lot of work to do for that to happen. And I think it will probably happen in a small portion of Kansas City. Maybe a small town, maybe on the Kansas side, like Prairie Village or Leawood, before it's going to happen to Kansas City Metro. That's just going to take a lot of education on the part of cyclists and the part of the general public, too.
That's certainly been the vision of Kansas City, because they do want to go for that platinum status, so it'd be nice to see that happen. To follow up on the bicycle friendliness, are there places in Kansas City that you would just definitely stay away from as a bicyclist?
Yeah, I would say Metcalf Avenue is probably one of the toughest roads to ride on, mm-hmm. specifically from Shawnee Mission Parkway up to 95th Street. And then there's some places out in the suburbs on the Kansas side that are very tough to ride on, say 151st Street out in the Lathe area. And out in Overland Park. And again, it also depends on the time of day, too. And then on the Missouri side, I would say that Warnell's a tough street to ride on. And then also Ward Parkway, although it does have three lanes, during rush hour it tends to be very busy. And just from the standpoint that you don't need to be on Ward Parkway, there's plenty of side streets adjacent to it. Matter of fact, Randy and I rode on them on the way down to the Tour of Missouri this year,
Yep.
You just don't need to be on those major streets sometimes. You know, you do have to be considerate of the drivers. And we're, you know, although I don't drive now, I'm still a driver. You know, I don't have anything against cars. And if I see a cyclist and it's rush hour and they're on a street that is dangerous for them, then, you know, they need to use common sense about that. So it definitely goes both ways.
I found the same thing about Ward Parkway. I thought it was, I organized a ride on Saturday mornings, and I've always tried to have a good route down.
Right.
And you'd think Ward would be pretty good. Now, early on Saturday mornings, it's not bad, but it does. Right. It's like it turns into an expressway.
It does.
Because cars are going so fast.
That's a good way to put it. And then, yeah, Southwest Traffic Way, you cannot ride a bike on. Yeah. Too dangerous.
Okay, one of the things we as cyclists often hear is that we don't pay gas tax, so we don't really deserve to be on the roads because we're not paying for them.
Right.
And, you know, kind of the standard answer there is that while we're cyclists, we still own cars. So we do pay gas tax and we do pay all these other taxes. But you don't own a car.
Right.
So you don't pay any of that. So aren't you just a freeloader?
Well, absolutely. I'm proud of it. And no, that's a totally ridiculous statement. And that's, you know, I don't know who comes up with these types of, not that you did, Randy, but you know, that's just one of the silly arguments. The fact is that I'm a cyclist. I'm on the road. To make a long story short, the car weighs, 2 to 4 to 5,000 pounds. The bike weighs just a fraction of that and is not going to be doing any damage on the roads. I actually don't need a road. I don't really need the streets and stuff. And I'm saving the environment. I'm not causing any kind of congestion. I'm not causing any kind of pollution. I'm not costing any money for them to have, you know, to put me in a hospital because I'm going to have coronary heart disease or I'm massively overweight. So therefore, I'm actually saving the cities and the states and probably the country money by riding my bike everywhere. So maybe they owe me money is kind of what I would come up with, but I'm just being silly there. Yeah. The bottom line is that's a ridiculous statement. Bicycles are good. They're fun. They're great for the environment. They're great for the health of the people. They're great for transportation, and everybody should ride them. And you know, gas is gas. You know, if you drive a car, I guess maybe you should pay gas tax. And I think that, and I don't know where all the money's going from all the taxes I pay, but I would think that some of the money that goes from my income tax or state taxes or sales tax is also going for the, you know, to pay for some of those roads too. So I think I probably am already paying taxes.
That's a good answer. Well, Bill, I know you have to run, and we'd love to talk to you probably another hour. Very fascinating, and it's great that you're made that commitment, and I'm sure folks that are considering that will listen to this podcast and be inspired. So thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
We appreciate you downloading episode 15 of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, and we do hope that you will become a subscriber so you will not miss out on future episodes. We have a lot of interesting news, information, bicycle safety tips, and interviews that we had planned for future episodes, so please come back. Also, take the time and leave your feedback, and or if you would like to become a sponsor, please write or send your audio file to podcast@kansascyclist.com or call us at 913-938-6855. Remember, there are show notes on the website which include links to all the information that has been discussed on each podcast. We would also like to thank Mark Fransky for allowing us to use his song called Brush Creek Crossing as our theme music. Take care and cycle safe.